We present at this time the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coghlan, emanating from Royal Oak, Michigan.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a few moments, Father Coghlan will address you, continuing with the theme he introduced last Sunday, the theme of strict neutrality with no cash or carry. There are a few announcements of importance I am instructed to make. First, many telegrams come to Father Coghlan, or have come to Father Coghlan this past week and today, announcing that groups in various cities are preparing mammoth mass meetings to protest against lifting the embargo. For example, in St. Louis, there's scheduled a mass meeting at the University Gymnasium for the evening of Thursday of this week. Dr. Edward Lodge Curran will address it. Practically every city is planning similar meetings this week and next week. Second, a period of prayer for peace, lasting 9 days, will be conducted at the Shrine of the Little Flower beginning 1 week from tomorrow. Thousands living everywhere will join in this, and hundreds of other churches throughout the nation will conduct similar novenas. You are invited to cooperate in this spiritual undertaking. And third, those of you planning to proceed peacefully to Washington should act in groups. Rent buses or trailers and bring your own provisions. If the peaceful citizens of America lose this fight in Washington, they will participate in the fight in Europe. Fourth, any help that Father Coghlan can render to any groups in planning their protest meetings will be gladly accorded. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Father Coghlan will address you on the subject which engages the attention of all. Father Coghlan.
Ladies and gentlemen and friends, this week Congress will convene in special session. This week, the people of the United States, through their representatives, will enter upon a debate which will result in peace or war. Before discussing the cash and carry clause, which to my mind is the first step inevitably terminating in the last step of our entrance into war, let me ask you some pertinent questions. They are questions which should be of interest to every congressman. Questions which should be of vital interest to those of us who will mold the cannon, man the guns, bear our breasts to the shrapnel, pay the debts, and shed the tears, which will follow if the proposed neutrality bill with all its consequences passes. Thus I ask you, will we support a cash and carry program which intelligent students know must develop into a credit and carry program? Will we give to the president the power to determine who is our enemy and who is our friend, a power now vested in Congress? Will we practically abandon the Constitution, holding only theoretically to its clauses, and establish in its stead a dictatorial form of government? Will we, who for more than 6 years have been mired in a man-made depression, will we seek a fictitious prosperity founded upon war and surrender all hope of a genuine prosperity founded upon peace? Will we say farewell to George Washington's national policy of no foreign entanglements and acclaim Mr. Roosevelt's international policy of meddling in European power politics? Will we forget the course of events which led us into the last World War? Promises to keep us out of it. Pressure of propaganda to get us into it. The sinking of the munition-laden British Lusitania on which Americans were traveling. Will we forget the extension of billions of dollars of credit to England and France by America, and the appeals made to the citizens to enlist in a righteous war to save these now defaulted debts under the pretext of saving the world for democracy and of fighting a war to end all war. Oh, will we erase from our memories the aftermath of the international bankers' carnival of corpses? It's millions of men who lost their lives, and it's handful of usurers who gained their fortunes. It's birth of red and brown Bolshevism. It's death of religious and political freedom. It's army of veterans who tramp the sidewalks of our city, jobs where there were none. Oh, will we bandage our eyes to the treatment accorded these veterans, unmindful of their struggle to obtain a bonus, unmindful of the attitude which this present administration adopted towards them when Mr. Roosevelt vetoed the payment of the bonus? Will we deceive ourselves during the forthcoming debates with the spurious consideration that this present war is a contest between good and evil for the preservation of civilization? A civilization which was almost wrecked in 1918 by the land-grabbing, treaty-breaking, imperialistic capitalism of the English and French governments, whose representatives were the chief signatories of the wicked war-breeding peace treaty of Versailles. A peace treaty which we Americans, thank God, refused to sign because it was not in harmony with the principles of Americanism. Will we consider these and many more facts as Congress this Thursday convenes either to keep us free or to sell us into bondage to the international bankers, the international politicians, the international warmongers, and the international plunderbunds whose spokesmen, like wolves in sheep's clothing, unctuously will try to entice us into this maelstrom of murder to stop Hitler, when it was their very policies that created a Hitler and will continue to create more Hitlers as long as they dominate the destinies of the world. My fellow citizens, to my mind, the neutrality bill about to be proposed for adoption by the present administration will contain not only a cash and carry clause, but other clauses which will establish our chief executive as a virtual dictator. It will clothe him with powers to name the unjust aggressor in a war in which all the participants are unjust aggressors. It will establish him rights to determine almost every activity and policy related to foreign affairs, and bestow upon him the power to regulate your every action. Now, it is my personal opinion, based on what has happened, that if we include a provision for cash and carry in a neutrality bill, we will have taken the first step which, as in 1914, inevitably will lead us into war with all its horrors. In reality, cash means credit. And credit, as you know, breeds carrion, C-A-R-R-I-O-N. the advocates of this perilous policy so anxious to have it passed and signed by the chief executive? Oh, they will tell you that it will give work to the unemployed. Certainly it will give them work. Work in factories for 6 months, for 12 months. And then more work. Work in the trenches, killing our fellow men, and feeding the rats with their own shattered, mangled bodies. And they will tell you that it will preserve our democracy against the assaults of Hitler. But while these professional propagandists within the very precincts of government smokescreen the public with such deceit, they are preparing to destroy democracy. I repeat that statement. They are preparing to destroy democracy. And to support that statement, let me condense for you a book recently published by Leo M. Czerny, C-H-E-R-N-E. A book which bears the sanctioning foreword of no one other than Lewis Johnson, the Assistant Secretary of War. Ponder, therefore, upon these disclosures. If the American people go into another war, so this book indicates, with the sanction, I insist, of the Assistant of the Secretary of War, if this country goes into another war, our citizens must expect to live under a form of regimentation unparalleled in the history of the United States or any other nation. Voluntary enlistment will be tolerated for a few months only, and then conscription will follow. Those who do not fight will be told where to work and how to work. Their wages will be regularized by the government, as is done in Germany and Russia today. Travel within the country will be prohibited to all workers without specific permission from the government. Women and children. This point is important. Women and children will be put to work in the steel mills, in the munition factories, in shops and on farms, so that production essential for warfare will not suffer when their husbands, fathers, sweethearts, and sons will be regimented for cannon fodder. Prices will be set within certain specific limits under the guise of preventing war profits. And these prices may cover all goods, or may be confined to food, clothing, and shelter, and the essentials of life. This point is now being debated in Washington by the War Resources Board. All private financial transactions will fall under the microscopic scrutiny of the War Commissariat, who will forbid any transaction which they consider inimical to the national defense. Rents will be fixed both for the tenant and for the owner. Home builders probably will require the permission of the government to proceed with their project. The supply of electricity for homes may be limited or rationed, or cut out entirely. If the government decides that it needs power for defense purposes or for munition factories, trips on motor buses, airplanes, and railroads will be subject to the decision of the transportation commissary, and will depend on the demand for transporting men, munitions, and materials for the army. My friends, These are not concoctions of my imagination. These are factual. Legislation, practically, already devised by the War Resources Board, which go into action immediately as war is declared. Such, my fellow citizens, is the program prepared for us. A 10-point program that will be executed contingent on the passage of the cash and carry proposals, which to my mind will terminate in war. And such is the program outlined in a book that bears the benediction of the Assistant Secretary of War, Mr. Lewis Johnson. In a moment, I shall return to this subject of the disclosures fortunately made known to us in this book at this crucial moment. But first, permit me to indulge in some speculation. Granted that the cash and carry plan is successfully piloted through Congress by Mr. Bloom and the President's support, unquestionably our idle factories will resume operations. All of them, practically all of them, are geared now for military activity. Sealed and blueprinted orders already are in the vaults of the large industries, waiting for the ominous word from Washington to be executed. All day, yes, and far into the night, flares will burn, wheels will spin, furnaces will vomit forth their smoke, lathes will screech the swan song of liberty, mounds of shrapnel will pile high, finished products for destruction will be marshaled at railroad sidings, and long lines of freight cars will trundle their cargo of death to the seaport. And waiting to receive this cargo will be British ships and French ships, ships from Turkey and Greece, ships from the Netherlands probably, ships even from the landlocked Balkans possibly, ships flying flags of foreigners, ships, however, that were bought and paid for with American credit, ships upon whose decks ride the ghosts of world despair and the demons of dissolution. Oh, but there will be no German ships, no Russian ships, no ships flying the hammer and sickle or the brown swastika. Meanwhile, factories will swallow in their sweat caverns the idle, exploited men and women and children of America. Men and women and children who believe the warmongering promises that we will not enter completely into this conflict, just as did their parents in 1916 believe another warmongering promise. But suddenly a factory in Detroit will be sabotaged. Pittsburgh will announce that a steel mill has been dynamited. New York and Baltimore will rock to their foundations when a boat laden with TNT will be shattered to atoms. Incidents will occur. Then notes will be written to Hitler, to Stalin. Convenient spies will be captured. Headlines will stir up the population, telling them that German and Russian agents are at work in our midst. Then when all is in a frenzy, war will be declared. Church bells will ring, sirens will blow, bands will play, and your sons, your husbands, your fathers will march off to work, feeding the rats in the trenches of France. Our
Are there not thousands of hired Stalinites in our country? Are there not thousands of brown Hitlerites dwelling amongst us? Have they not already demonstrated their intents and purposes? When their enemies are being fed and armed and equipped by an American government whose stabilization fund, whose sympathies, whose factories, whose policies were utilized to favor Britain and France, will not these Stalinites and Hitlerites, these enemies within our gates, produce the necessary incident to do in 1939 what was done with the Lusitania, preceding our entrance into the last world war? Oh, then a government promised to keep us out of war. But all promises sank to the bottom of the Atlantic with the Lusitania. Promises today are no better than promises of yesterday. They, too, will evaporate into thin air with the smoke arising from an incident. To keep us out of war, let us keep from taking the first step which leads to war. Keep away from cash, which means credit. Credit in printing press dollars, which England is turning out by the millions today. Printing press dollars, which our government is willing to accept for destruction, although it refused to use printing press dollars for American prosperity and construction. Printing press dollars which will be surely repudiated following this war, just as surely as the printing press debts were repudiated after the last war. Oh, keep away from this crimson credit. Those who are willing to accept it, yes, they're also willing to create an incident. Did I say that it is an idle speculation to consider these things? Is it an idle speculation when you remember the millions of anti-American communists, Nazis, and their fellow travelers who dwell amongst us? Is it an idle speculation when you remember their activities just as recently as the date of the Spanish Civil War? To prevent a war-making incident, therefore, from happening here, there is only one course to follow, and that is to prevent our factories, our ports, and our money from offering the enemies within our gates an opportunity to wreak their vengeance upon both a Republican form of government and a code of liberties which these enemies do not love. Shall we risk our Americanism and our Christianity, therefore, for the blood profits to be gained by the internationalists? Most certainly, the internationalists want world revolution. And they want it here in America. They know that once Americans are catapulted into the program of merchandising murder for Europeans, dictatorship and war will follow. And when the war will terminate, They also know that American soldiers who return from their bloodbath will join with the radicals to overthrow a government that was responsible for their sufferings, setting up in its place a proletarian mob rule dedicated to at least one principle. The principle of no more wars, no more cannon fodder for the internationalist plunderbund. But let me turn back to the book which describes how we will be regimented upon our declaration of war. A book, may I remind you again, whose preface was written by the Assistant Secretary of War. A book which outlines the actual, not the proposed, the actual plans already adopted by the Army and Navy. The editor of the Atlantic City Press last Sunday wrote as follows in commenting upon the contents of these plans. Said he, "The specifications for these sweeping controls of everyday life are laid down in two broad plans. One covering mobilization of industrial resources. The other, mobilization of manpower. Today, these are only plans, if you will. They cannot go into operation until Congress passes legislation or the President proclaims them in effect under the war powers the Constitution gives him. But they have been worked out gradually by the Army and Navy Departments ever since the World War ended." Mr. Charney, the author of the book, observes that war presents little time for parliamentary quibbling, and there is little doubt that shortly after M Day, Mobilization Day, but M stands for Murder Day as far as you're concerned, these, the plans here discussed, will be effectuated almost in exact detail. In justification of such dictator-like plans for a democratic country, Assistant Secretary of War Mr. Johnson says in his foreword, quotes, "Modern war has become not only a conflict of soldiers, but of economic systems. And other things being equal, the timely and effective mobilization of industry and control of economic resources will determine the final outcome." The book emphasizes that the plans are designed to correct the mistakes of the last war. In the World War, in the World War, months were spent in raising volunteers by appeals to patriotism. When that failed to raise the required forces, a draft was instituted. Because of the way the whole thing was handled, the trenches received thousands of men who would have been more useful in wartime industry at home. But under the plans for the next war, only 2 months will be allotted to voluntary enlistment, and that only because it takes about 60 days to set the draft machinery moving. Thus, the first draft will call men between 21 and 31 years of age. There are somewhere between 10 and 12 million of these in this country, but about 6 million of them will be deferred from the fighting service for a greater or less period of time. The second draft, if it becomes necessary, will call men between 31 and 45 years of age. Nothing is said about being married or unmarried. These number 13 million and are subject to the same deferment, namely, being more valuable as managers or directors of key industries, being clergymen, ministers of the gospel. As in the world war, that wrath will follow the lottery system. Deferment will be decided on a local basis by boards of your own fellow citizens. And those who are deferred will be told where they shall work and at what wages. That's what the next war will be like if the United States comes to it. If America is to retain a neutral peace, warns Mr. Charney, whom I'm still quoting, this peace will be paid for in heavy loss of business, with the resultant depression of domestic activity. And this, in turn, will result in a move on the part of business to force the repeal of the Johnson and Neutrality Act, thereby permitting America to reap the supposedly rich harvest of foreign gold. If this campaign succeeds, we will be on the same road we traveled in 1914 to 16. And after 1916 came 1917, unquote, with the preface by the Assistant Secretary of War. 1917. Yes. 1920. 1927 and 29. And the market class. And 1933. When our hopes were so buoyed up by a promise to derive the money changers from the temple. 1933 to 1939, when we patiently waited for that reform to mature. And it was non-existent. All those were years, interminable years, watching bonuses paid to industry, watching banks being bailed out, watching an uneven struggle for honest American men to remain honest. To remain aloof from the temptations of the radical. All these were years of grief when bonuses were withheld from the war. Years of poverty when farms and homes were confiscated. Years that were perhaps carefully planned to condition the poor and the wearied into accepting this present sought from Satan. A war job. A job predicated on the spilling of our brother's blood. Brothers whom the policies of wicked government have turned at this moment into primeval beasts to sate the greed and the hate of the money changers abroad and their abettors here at home. Oh, must these years be duplicated? Must they be the forerunner of years more horrible? Years in which the little children who are playing in the hallowed sun this beautiful day, years in which these grown-up children will forget the sun, forget the liberties, forget the stars and stripes, forget the dream of prosperity and happiness that is ours, and forget their God, as they stand with bowed heads and broken spirits to chant the International. Oh, no, my fellow citizens, this must not be. There must be a resurrection. There must be a new Easter day for those of us who tasted the bitter vinegar of the last World War, whose hands were fixed to the tree of poverty by cruel nails of unemployment, and whose side was pierced by the lance of broken promises. Yes, I'm thinking of Christ as he hangs upon his cross. I'm thinking of Christ, the corpse. I'm thinking of Christ nailed to the cross and then sealed in his tomb. I'm thinking of the God-man who rose glorious from the dead to die no more. Friends, you and I, and all the faithful, are members of the mystical body of Christ. In one sense, our common mystical life should be patterned after the physical life, after the suffering of Jesus Christ. Oh, we have had it patterned after those sufferings almost long enough. Is it not time that our mystical life now be patterned after the physical life of Christ the Conqueror? Oh, in the past, we have been spied upon by the scribes and Pharisees, propagandists. We have been calumniated by the radicals. We have been betrayed by false leaders who sold us for 30 pieces of silver, the international bankers. We too have had our Gethsemane, our experience in Pilate's hall, Versailles, our heavy cross to bear in our Calvary of 1917. Oh, we have been crucified between the thieves of greed and hate long enough. We've been buried in the tomb of despair. But the darkness of this present hour, when all seems lost, and when the thunder of cannon and the flash of bombs appear to be threatening the stability of the earth, I can see the dawn light of an Easter morn for the mystical body of Christ. Sursum corda. Lift up your hearts, there. Raise them high in this crucial moment to the God who has permitted you and me and all of us to suffer for a while, that we may conquer forever. Therefore, onward! Onward, Christian soldiers! Away with all the fatalism of death and war! Away with all the morbid thoughts of despair! Away with that un-Christian, un-American spirit that surrenders meekly to the new programs of cash and carry, of war, of destruction, of dissolution. Oh, God our Father and Christ our King, desiring that we retain our liberties, desiring that we remain free from the bondage prepared for us, God our Father and Christ our King, want no part in any blood business. For they remind us that they who use the sword shall perish by it. And what will we do? What will we do? Will we be content to listen to these impotent words of mine and simply say, Amen? Or will you, my friends and fellow citizens, will you act? Will you act now for God and for country and for the preservation of the world? Next week may be too late. This week finds the future of America and Europe and all civilization hanging in the balance. Congress convenes next Thursday. Congress holds in its hands our temporal future, our liberty, and our Christian Americans. Oh, Congress is so hard pressed by the advocates of cash and carry. Only a small group of congressmen at this moment support our views. Congress needs your help now more than ever. Congress is waiting for you to offset the power of the money changers, the prestige of the internationalists, and the persuasiveness of their time-serving spokesmen. What will you do, gentlemen? Will you strike a blow for God and country? Or will you accept the verdict of war that is morally sure to follow in the wake of cash and carry? You, mothers of America, mothers of the sons and daughters, mothers-to-be of future generations, what will you do? Are you content to grieve, to shed tears at the prospect of this horror? Or are you prepared to strike your blow for God and country and for the children whom you have suckled or will suckle at your breast? May I read a word for you, which I received today from Mrs. Paul Rylander of Baltimore. A challenging letter to the mothers and maidens of America. She says, I am taking the liberty of writing to you because I consider that you as a man of God are naturally opposed to the inhuman and senseless slaughter of the very flower of the young American manhood. We mothers, we're trembling on the very brink of being drawn into this awful inferno that today blackens the skies of European civilization. Why should America again be a pawn on the insane chessboard of foreign politics? Did we learn nothing from the Holocaust of 1914? It was my privilege to be in France and England some 7 years ago. Oh, poor France. With billions of gold in her vaults over and above that excellent and expensive piece of engineering, the Maginot Lines. Billions for war and bloodshed, but not one franc for peace and for Uncle Sam. If we are not exceedingly wary, we'll be left burdened, bearing a burden. Neutrality, embargoes, words. Neutrality with the door left open for the garnering of blood-smeared dollars. The anguish and heartbreak of millions for the enrichment of a few. Oh, what a convenient coverage, Father. What a convenient coverage war would prove for the wasteful incompetence of the American administration. In a few days, Congress will meet. God help us. Anything can happen. But must we mothers who have borne these sons remain tearfully inarticulate while the dripping, menacing hand of war reaches ever nearer to our hearts? We women have the right. Be heard. Why can't we make it count for something? We stand for the conservation of life, not its destruction. I've talked with scores of mothers in the past few weeks, and they are all united in their attitude. They are agreed that if we are attacked, they would give their sons with Spartan fortitude, and like the poor plucky Polish women, they themselves would help man the gun. But we women of Maryland, of ourselves, can do nothing without the rest of the country. If through the length and breadth of these United States all the church women would band together, thoroughly canvass their respective communities, and get the support of their constituents, I believe Washington would be forced to sit up and take notice. Women are always and unalterably opposed to war. Well, then, if that is so, instead of wasting their energies in tears, why can't the womanhood of America rise up and outlaw war? Present a solid flank against conscription and cash and carry. The gods of war would be seriously embarrassed. It would be the choice of bullets or ballots. Not a petition. This is no time for petitions, but an ultimatum. Yours very truly, Mrs. Paul Rylander. Membership chairman and hostess of the National League of American Pen Women and relative of the late Cardinal Gibbons. I wonder if this good mother's word sounds a receptive chord in the hearts of you mothers and you maidens in this audience. Instead of asking that you will do something about this thing, for God's sake, do something about it. Do it in your neighborhood, your club, your school, your office. And realize that there is a contest on here at home. Wall Street against Main Street. Brokers are predicting war within 6 months. Foreign gold and foreign speculators are in our midst. They're gambling on war as they overrun our domestic markets. How are you wagering, Mr. or Mrs. American citizen? Will Wall Street win as it always has won? Will Main Street lose as it always has lost? If the foreign speculators get the cash, will your boys and husbands and sweethearts carry the guns of this contest? This financial contest, few of you are aware. While the nation's emotions are aroused over the attempt to embroil us in war through the medium of cash and carry, it is unaware of the financial drama being played upon the boards of Wall Street. England and France and Germany, yes, Germany, through neutral channels, having taken positions in our stock and commodity markets, sold their holdings during the past 2 weeks of a rising market, thereby realizing profits running into the billions of dollars. You didn't know that. And for what purpose? The answer is brief. For the purpose of acquiring cash dollars, which can be converted into gold dollars by foreign banks. A transaction not permitted to Americans. And you ask why their desire to possess gold dollars. And that question is easily answered by the initiated. England, France, and Germany realize that with the fall of the British pound sterling, yes, it fell last week, the American dollar will suffer a similar fate in order to support our domestic speculators and to maintain parity in foreign trade. This means that with the profits made by these foreign countries, they will buy our gold at $35 an ounce and sell it back to us, possibly at $40 an ounce, as was done before, thereby gaining a second profit almost as much as the first. Mr. and Mrs. American citizen, Main Street already has started paying to Wall Street its first installment for the war. And this will not dawn upon you, Mrs. America, until you buy your groceries, your fuel, and your commodities at higher prices. In conclusion, permit me to read for you a portion of an editorial which I wrote for Social Justice this week. It goes as follows. American men and women, the Second World War has begun. For more than 2 weeks, European armies of slaughter and destruction have been marching over France, Germany, and Poland. For more than 2 weeks, three of the world's greatest powers have been engaged in the death struggle which is expected to put the finishing touches upon Western civilization. Can there not be an oasis in this world of bleeding humanity? Can there be a country strong enough to withstand the infection of war and dedicate itself to a strict policy of neutrality and peace? Positively, yes. The United States of America, guided by wise and prudent statesmanship, can effectively remain aloof from entangling alliances and be a mighty bulwark of Christianity and civilization. Already there are insidious forces at work, insidious forces that are attempting to drive America along the bloody trail of 1917. These forces are endeavoring to get us into war through the back door of a specious cash-and-carry program. As was explained in my radio address last Sunday, there is no valid cash-and-carry program. Already a War Resources Board has been established to act, and act quickly, when we're catapulted into war. Already government officials have abandoned hope of remaining out of this world war, else they would have set up a Peace Resources Board. Already the Reconstruction Finance Corporation is being geared to act as the government lending agency for the warmongers at home and abroad. Already Mr. Jesse Jones, the president of that corporation, has been taken into the cabinet. Already the president of the country has patterned his plan after the Wilsonian pattern, which started out by promising us isolation and ended by forcing us into intervention. Already Mr. Roosevelt has satirized the present Neutrality Act by calling it a so-called Neutrality Act. Already the propaganda machines are at work to condition our minds to sympathize with Great Britain and France, the two major land grabbers of all time. Already the Treasury Department under Mr. Morgenthau is arranging its affairs for war procedure. Already they who pull the strings which control money are engaged in upping prices on food supplies and raw materials to prepare you to pay for the next war. Already we are being told that there is scarcity in a land bulging with plenty. And inferentially, this is being blamed upon the wicked men abroad. Already millions of our people have discarded the advice of George Washington and fatalistically have adopted the plan of foreign entanglement. Already the profiteers of Wall Street, first cousin of the international profiteers living in every country of the world, are singing their songs of hate and are urging our citizenry to jeopardize their peace, their liberty, their religion, in order to enter a grudge war against one of the land grabbers of Europe. Already New York City looks like London or Paris or Berlin, because Mayor LaGuardia has declared an emergency act to condition his constituents. And already Mr. Roosevelt, aping Mr. LaGuardia, has declared a preliminary emergency for the entire United States. Although we're thousands of miles away from the combatants, who have no navy with which to attack us, and no available transports to carry soldiers to our shores. Already we have heard it said by Mr. Roosevelt that our first line of defense is in France. Already the Federal Reserve Bank has appointed a fiscal agent to control American money during the next war. Already Congress has abandoned its right to regulate our money. Already millions upon millions of dollars worth of war material is being produced to send to Europe. Already we are better than halfway into the war trap. And what are you, American people, going to do about it? Wake up, fathers and mothers, sons and daughters of America. wake up to preserve our liberty and to safeguard our autonomy. Whether or not you're aware of it, the internationalists own us body and soul. They'll have their Uncle Shylock, as they called us since 1918. They'll have Uncle Shylock's sons fight their battles, rot in their trenches, and pay their bills. And what are we doing about this entire rotten business? What are we doing? My friends, organize your neighbors, your family, your club members, your fellow citizens. Not only petition your congressmen to keep strict neutrality, but demand that he and his family get out with you to march on Washington in the greatest peace demonstration of our entire history. Yes, organize your army of peace. Organize it in every ward, in every city, in every state. Organize for peace demonstrations this week. You and your fellow citizens can keep us out of war if you have the courage to act now. And you can find some member of the American Legion or of some other organized group of soldiery who can lead you in your peaceful demonstration. Those who cannot arrange to send a group to Washington and thereby directly petition their senators and their congressmen, they too must play a part. Upon them, I call upon to write individual letters to their representatives and senators this week. Petitions, bear in mind, of a general nature are not worth the paper they're written on. Individual letters alone are valuable. I call upon those of you who can afford it to send hundreds of thousands of telegrams to your congressman. I call upon you in the spirit of Paul Revere to organize a no-cash and a no-carry parade and meeting of protest. Let Paul Revere ride again. I call upon you in this testing time to show America that we are still believers in George Washington. God bless him, all foreign entanglements. And to indicate to the War Department that their carefully prepared plans of regimentation are not meant for the free citizens of these United States. Thus, my friends, act today, this week. Thus is born a crusade for peace. March on, carry on for God and country. God wills it. God bless you.
Mass action means mass success. Inaction means positive defeat for our ideals of Americanism and Christianity. Act this week. Act as one solid citizenry. The international bankers are against you. To oppose them is to oppose the sinister forces responsible for the European War, for the Treaty of Versailles, for the generation of Stalin and Hitler, and for the oppression of innocent millions in the world. America must keep out of war. America must keep out of the blood business. Make sure that your representatives really represent you and not the plunderbuns who exploit you. Act this week. Act forcefully, peacefully, and determinedly. Else your liberties are gone. Your property becomes an idle dream, and your Christianity will meet the same fate accorded to it in every other dictatorial country. Write to Father Coughlin for a copy of today's address. Encourage him to carry on in the name of God and country. Thank you. This is your announcer, Franklin Mitchell, asking you once again to write directly to Father Coughlin at Royal Oak, Michigan, for a copy of this Sunday's address, and to join us again next week at this same time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have presented the regular Sunday afternoon address of Father Charles E. Coughlin from Royal Oak, Michigan. Statements made and views expressed on this program are made on the sole responsibility of the sponsor and do not reflect the views of this station, its management, or personnel. Father Coughlin came to you as a presentation on your dial at 1250 kilocycles.